Our panel includes Nancy Adams. We've got Nick Houston, who's a sound guy and a director, producer. Ann Johnson, who is a retired production accountant. She knows where all the bodies are buried. She's been around production forever. And Tammy Soto, who's here to talk about insurance. So should I insure my gear? For how much? What should I do? With that, I leave you with these strong panelists to kind of take you through. Nick, you've done a lot of work as a sound person, as a producer. You've set up, you know, give us some of your experiences, things you wish you would have done earlier, and then on down the line.
I mean, I think the one thing that I take away from this is that, you know, number one, always listen to the people that know a lot more about it than you. So, like, guys like these, having a CPA, like, I don't do my taxes, I don't touch it, but I do my own accounting. And I think it's really important that, you know, having a limited knowledge of, you know, of QuickBooks or some kind of accounting software somewhere where you're tracking and keeping things in the right boxes. So when you get to April 15th, your accountant is not, you know, just pulling their hair out, can be really, really important. And also, you know, sitting down and having a plan. I know that when I became a freelancer in 2007, you know, I would come in with all these 1099s, and then all of a sudden it was, oh, you owe, you know, 30% of what you brought in on 1099s. And, it, you know, I had a heart attack. And I ate ramen noodles like I was in college for 2 months. And then, you know, there was this whole thing about paying quarterly taxes. And then it was like a heart attack every, you know, every 3 months. And, you know, I've set up my own mechanism where basically anything I bring in via 1099, I set aside a good chunk of it that I don't touch. It doesn't even come to my personal bank account. Goes from my LLC into the savings account, and then, you know, a portion of that can actually come to me personally. And that's been a way where it's like, oh, wow, I actually have, you know, that amount of money that I could use to buy a car to pay my taxes, which I think, you know, that if I could say that, I would say set up a system and trust people like these to get your stuff done.
I'll add on to that to say that I did a presentation recently where I sort of did some math, and I sat down and said, okay, person's bringing in X amount of dollars, and when you go from, and they have, you know, a certain amount of expenses, at the end of the day, how much, what percentage of every gross dollar should they be setting aside? In the example that I had something like someone making $50,000 of self-employment income with $10,000 of expenses, and the math worked out to be that they needed to set aside 20 cents of every dollar that they made to set it aside for taxes. And, you know, the calculus on that will change a little bit if you're making more than that, but a good rule of thumb is probably 25 cents on every dollar that you set aside to pay your taxes. And it's key that, you know, as you said, in to know when those are going to be due. You know, they're due in April and June and September and January. So, you know, getting together with a professional to say, you know, what are my obligations? When do I have to have the money? You know, how should I be setting this aside? Those are good things. The other thing is having a system of accounting. And I'll tell you that accountants love QuickBooks or Quicken so much more than Excel. The main thing is, this is one of those accounting buzzwords, is double entry accounting integrity. Is I can't tell if your Excel spreadsheet has any mistakes, and I don't want to go through and audit every formula there. So if you use QuickBooks or QuickBooks Online, I'm far happier with that. It's a good idea. Bite the bullet. Pay for a little bit of training up front. I just was sitting with two new clients that had a friend of theirs help them learn how to use it, and I'm like, oh, that was a mistake. Oh, because we had to go through and look at all of the expenses that had been miscategorized. And so we spent a little bit of time with training, and now they understand what their homework assignments are and when they need to reconcile and how often they need to do it. So, you know, it should be better going forward. But if you can just take a little bit of time up front and learn how to use it, it'll make your life so much easier. Those are the things that I wanted to say.
Okay, I have a couple of things I wanted to add to what Nancy said. But as I tell my clients to save 40%.
I do.
But no, because you have to pay federal tax, the Social Security, self-employment tax, New York state tax and New York City tax. And it's true it's on the net, but nevertheless, it's high up there. Okay, one thing I wanted to say is that if you are entitled to reimbursements from your employee and you don't ask for it, you cannot deduct it. I happen to like to prepare all of my clients for the possibility of an audit, even though chances are you won't be. But I think it's a good idea for you to prepare everything so that it's there if you ever need it. And also it's much more accurate. But I wanted to say, and one of the very first things that an auditor asks for is the reimbursement policy from your employer. I also have to tell you that I've been to many, many audits, although a lot less in the last, I've been doing this 37, 38 years about. And I also was a production accountant for 15 years, so I sort of know both sides. But auditors are, it's a crapshoot. You can get somebody that will accept everything, and you will get somebody that will accept nothing. I had an auditor tell me that my client, who was a director, could take 80% of his cable television. And then another director said, well, only 15%. And I said, well, if you only take 15%, I'm going to fight you. And you should also know that if you don't like what the auditor decides, you can appeal. And if you think the auditor is being prejudicial, you can stop the audit and ask for another audit. And the other thing is, you should not go to the audit yourself. You should send me. Okay. Nancy talked about $75 without receipts. That's for basically for meals in town, and also for things. I would say if you're traveling, tips. You know, to the hotel or the people who carry your bags or whatever, out-of-pocket magazines bought from a newsstand that are business-related. Things like that that you would not ordinarily get receipts for. Everything else, you got to get a receipt. Even though you don't really have to have them for cabs, but they are now given out, you might as well get it. And the other thing that I wanted to talk about was when you are working out of state. If you live in New York and you work in Texas, for instance, Texas doesn't have a state tax. So you have to make sure that your employer is withholding taxes for New York State and New York City and sending it in. Now, if you're working for a company that hires entertainment partners or one of the bigger payroll companies, they will do it. But you also need to look at your pay stubs to make sure that you're having the New York State and city taxes withheld. If you're working in a state where the tax rate is lower than New York, they are supposed to, and in most cases it is, you have to make sure that they are withholding the difference between what you'd be taxed in New York and what should be taxed in the other state, and sending that difference to New York and also the city tax if you live in the city. And the other thing is that if you are working out of state, do not play around with your dependents on your START forms, your W-4 forms, your exemptions. You need to put down what you are only entitled to claim at the end of the year. Otherwise, you're going to end up owing that state taxes because you can only deduct your expenses against your own state's taxes. Okay.
Good answer. Hello, everyone. My name is Tammy, and I do specialize in production insurance. I do that all day, every day. And so I understand the different occupations here because I get those phone calls, again, all day, every day. Not trying to sell insurance, but I do suggest that you do, if you have exposure, if you're a producer and you're producing your own projects, you should have insurance. If you are hiring anyone in the insurance world, if you are 1099 anyone, they are considered your employees. You should have workers' comp in place. Workers' comp and disability does go hand in hand, so you definitely need both. If you have your own equipment, you should have it insured as well. Don't assume that the production company is going to insure it if you're working for them. Yes. In the production world, if you're a production company, you have your own company, and you're going to hire, let's say, myself, to work in your office for about 5 days. You're going to just pay me, like, again, you're going to 1099 me. If they get hurt while they're working for you, they can file a claim. They're going to expect you to pay their doctor bills. So, exactly. It's a good thing for you to have it.
That's right. So that with the way that workers' comp, when they do a workers' comp audit, they exempt people. The when the auditors come in to audit it, you know, the insurance companies send their audit people. They exempt people who can prove that they have their own workers' comp insurance. You're allowed to say, I want to waive coverage for these people. But technically, they should be under your policy because they could sue you. And that's one of those ones where they won't respect any of the exceptions to the limits of liability. If someone is hurt while they're on, you know, under your umbrella, then you would be personally obligated to pay that. Typically, the way that the policy works is that it's based on covered wages. So it doesn't necessarily mean how many people work for you. It's based on how much money that you're paying in wages. So if I've got somebody that's, you know, I'll in advance of getting the policy, I'll say that, you know, over the course of the next year, I think that I'm going to pay $50,000 in covered wages for production employees. And then I'll pay a certain amount. And at the end of the year, they'll come back and they'll say, well, how much did you actually pay? You estimated that you were going to pay 50. And if I only paid 40, then I could get a refund of the premiums that I paid. If I paid 60, then they'll say, you know, you owe me a little bit of money. But it's based on your estimate of covered wages.
Disability is based on the number of people that work for you. Mm-hmm. So it's versus male versus female.
Then yes. I mean, technically that should be true. If they're not on your premises or not at your job site or not at your location.
Normally they have their own insurance as well. So it's up to you to get proof of that. Because again, when in the insurance, you get audited by the insurance company, but you also could get audited by the state. So the insurance company, they just want proof. So if this editor was working for you, the only way that you don't declare their payroll is if you show proof that they had their own insurance. Or that they're a company.
Let's go back for the question of what is insurance. Insurance is money that you pay to mitigate your risk. And the risk is that, you know, if someone claims that, you know, whether or not it's true, if someone claims that, you know, they were injured on your job site or, you know, whatever, you have a risk. And having insurance protects you against that risk. And the rules around workers' comp are somewhat complicated. And, you know, it varies by state and it varies by sort of location, if you will. But it's your responsibility as, quote, an employer to cover your own employees and to cover contractors that work for you. Now, if you can show that they are their own company, often they will just, if they hold themselves out to be in this business. Technically, if I'm a self-employed person that has my own LLC, I'm not obligated under state law to have to carry a workers' compensation insurance, and maybe I don't have it. Often when the auditors come in, they will say, all right, anyone that has their own Inc., anyone that has their own LLC, I will exempt them from the coverage, you know, in terms of calculating what your premium assessment should be. But if they're an independent contractor and just a name, just a person, then, you know, you should be covering them under your policy because you have a risk. If they're an LLC, if they're a corporation, maybe that's different. But if they're just an individual, you know, you should probably cover them.
It seems like that specific case where, you know, they're so isolated, it's less about them actually being injured and more about them trying to take advantage of the system in some way. So, you know, as long as you're not dealing with somebody who's shady, you're probably fine. But as they're saying, like, insurance is to cover your butt.
Cool.
You got the floor now.
Finally. Hello, people. I was wondering if, this is for all you guys, if you could speak on just anything about setting aside money for retirement as a freelancer, a sole contractor. Are there anything that you, like any policies that you see find work better for us? Because, you know, some months are up, and then some months, I guess, during the now. Like, we probably are really down and trying to go from just to get by. Anything as far as, like, an IRA, a Roth IRA? I heard you mention earlier, like, a SEP, S-E-P.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you guys would recommend or you can talk more to?
I'll speak to my experience in terms of funding retirement is, it's think of it as pay as you go. Pay it when you have the money, because the double whammy for, or the triple whammy for me is when someone comes to me in April and says, you know, I need to do my taxes, I want to fund my retirement, I didn't pay all my estimates. The likelihood that they're going to fund their retirement at that moment is probably fairly low, because they've got to pay the balance due with the old return, they've got to set aside money to pay their first quarter estimate, and they've got to fund their retirement. So if you can fund it during the year as you go, that's even better. So kick in money now, kick in every time you get a job, you know, fund 10%, fund something, some percentage of it. The merits of the different types of retirement plans, the Roth IRA is the best thing since sliced bread, but, you know, it's you don't get a tax deduction now, but then again, you don't pay tax on the money when you take it out, or any future retirement, any future earnings on that account. The issue is that you're very limited in how much money you can kick in. If you're less than 50, you can put in $5,500 a year. If you're 50 or over, you can put in $6,500 a year, but that's not a ton of money. The SEP plan, if you put in money to a simplified employee pension, which is a form of IRA, it's tied to being self-employed or having your own company and paying yourself wages. And theoretically, you can put in a much higher percentage. If you are funding a SEP IRA through your S corporation, you could put in up to 25% of your declared wages. So you could fund significantly more than just a regular or Roth IRA. Anything you want to add to that, Ann?
Well, just that first of all, if you make over a certain amount of money, you can't contribute to a Roth. Isn't that correct?
And that's right. For a single individual, it phases out between, I think, like 115 to 130 or 100.
Yeah, it changes. It changes every year.
That's
so
right.
It's something you have to look up, or I would have to look up. But then there, as far as IRAs are concerned, there's one that's completely deductible, and then you can also put one in a non-deductible IRA, but you still have to pay taxes on the earnings of that money, but not on the actual principal. Then the other things are that you can't take the money out until you're 59 and a half without paying a 10% penalty. When you're 71 and a half, you have to start taking a required minimum distribution. That is not true of a Roth. With a Roth, you can leave it in, I think, 5 years and take it out with no penalty. Is that correct? Right. So that's as far as IRAs are concerned. And who you do it with, you know, you can go to a bank, you could go to a broker, you can go to
a mutual fund company.
Yeah, yeah. And all kinds of people will do it. Just make sure that you know who they are and that it's performing well for you.
So if you want to take advantage of the Roth IRA and you're contributing the maximum $5,500, what is the secondary option that you can do if you want to contribute more than that to a different retirement plan? Or does participating in an SEP preclude you from participation at all in the Roth IRA?
Well, if you could potentially, let's say that you were at an employer that offered a 401k, you could potentially also contribute to a regular or to a Roth IRA if you were within the income limits. But I think that you would be precluded from also, if you contributed to a SEP, that you would be precluded from contributing to a Roth. So the interesting thing about contributing to any retirement plan, going back to, we were talking about the S corporation, you can only make a contribution to a retirement plan to the extent that you have earned income.
Right.
What is earned income? It's self-employment income, you know, as reported on Schedule C. It's W-2 wages, but it is not rental income. So if you let's say that you had a W-2 job and you also had rental income, you could not make an IRA contribution or a SEP contribution against the rental income.
Well, I just want to say one thing about that, and that is, you know, if you're like a sound technician and you go to to do a film and you get paid wages and you rent your equipment on the side, that's considered a rental. If you are in the business of renting equipment, then your income is subject to self-employment tax.
So you would report that on right. Schedule C, though.
Right, on Schedule yeah. C. Yes, you yeah. report it on Schedule C.
Right.
I have a question. I have a developing production company, and it's an insurance question. Are there options where you can just do a like, project-by-project type of insurance scenario versus like having an annual kind of deal?
Yes, but it's not... It won't benefit you. It'll end up costing you more at the end. Absolutely.
Is workers' comp included in that?
It can be. That would be considered short-term insurance. Uh-huh. So per project, you probably, depending on what you need. So if you're going to insure your equipment, you're definitely going to need liability. You might need auto. If you're going to have crew on the set, you're going to need workers' comp. So that's one set. If you're going to look for coverage for 10 days, you easily looking at about $1,500 to $2,000, easily. Annual insurance can cost you about $5,000 to $6,000. So if you have five jobs for the year, you're spending more.
Along the same lines, general liability, I've noticed that the things have changed a little bit. So who am I depending on to carry general liability now? In some cases, the producer or the venue, they have to carry general liability, you know, for the audience or whoever is coming in. But now I'm being asked to do it on a case-by-case basis right. on a million or 200 riders. So more specifically,
are you a producer?
Should I be... No, I'm just a freelance sound guy bringing in equipment.
Okay.
But they're saying you need to carry general liability insurance. So should I be looking more for the producer or the venue for that, or are we now... supposed to be carrying general liability.
Well, if you're being hired by the production company, it's their insurance. It should be their insurance that to cover you and your negligence and whatever you're doing. But a lot of times, since you're bringing your own equipment to the set or to location, they want to make sure that when you're coming into their venue and you do something wrong, that you're going to be properly covered as well. Because why would the production company want to cover your negligence? It was your fault. You left wires there. I tripped over it. I'm not going to sue the production company. I'm going to go after you. So you should have your own liability.
So when we do a complete package, then moving ahead, we're looking for workers' comp. We're looking for $1 million, $2 million of general liability, in addition to inland marine
equipment covered. Yes. Wow.
I'm going to open a hot dog stand.
The good news is at least it's tax deductible.
Yeah, it's all deductible.
So I did want to mention one thing that I just looked at my slides and realized that I didn't put my email address. So it's nadams@akmcpa.com. Akmcpa.com is on the front slide, but... first initial, last name, nadams@akm. So if you want to shoot me a question, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Oh. Hey, yeah. To switch back to, I think this is a question for Ann or Nancy. I'm a freelance cameraman. I've been doing this for a while. But I just wanted to know, is there a correct way to invoice that would be beneficial to you in the event of an audit? Because I work for a lot of the big companies like ESPN and all those guys where you have to front a lot of your costs and you also get a per diem, but 99% of the time the per diem is never delivered up front. So I just send in an invoice for my services, for my gear, for all expenses, for per diem, and it's all lumped together. And then they just write you a check, and I do the quarterly thing, but I've never really been like diligent with it. And I just wanted to know, is there a right way to invoice for this, or should I be doing something different?
Well, first of all, per diem assumes that you're working out of town.
Yeah.
So, okay.
90%, 95% of my work is done exclusively out of town and out of country, like the up-in-the-air dude. So I'm, like, never in one place.
I don't know that... from my perspective, if you're self-employed, you have your own company or you're self-employed, your income is pretty much going to be treated the same. So, you know, there's some element of this is for your fees, this is for your expenses, this is for all of that. It doesn't really matter to me. You know, you're going to get one lump sum from them, and then how you account for that is you're going to go back and you're going to deduct all of those expenses that you've invoiced for against it. And so you'll net down to essentially this is my fee. But from my perspective in terms of how you're invoicing, doesn't really matter.
Okay.
I would say that if you are actually renting equipment, you should separate that invoice so that the rental gets reported as a 1099 rental as opposed to a 1099 non-employee compensation, which is subject to the self-employment tax. And I wanted to also say something about per diem. If you're working out of town, the IRS has a table of how much it costs to eat in every city in the world. And it's very easy to find, too. But, for instance, New York is $71 a day. So if you're from out of town and you can spend $71 a day essentially without receipts, but you have to be able to prove that you were in the travel locality. If you're working on a film and you get lunch paid on the set, it's less. Correct me if I'm wrong, but if you go to a travel locality where the allowable rate is $71 and you're only getting $25 a day, you could essentially deduct the balance. Of course, you only get half of it anyway, but you still get to deduct, you deduct the balance of what you were allowed to get to spend, even though you didn't get it.
That's right. They have you can go to the different web, if you Google like per diem allowance. There are two methods. They have a couple of methods. There's I love this. There's CONUS and OCONUS. So CONUS stands for Continental United States. Right. OCONUS is outside the continental United States. So there are different rates for being domestic and versus international. There's sort of an actual one where they do go locality by locality, and there's also a high-low one where they have sort of if you're in sort of low certain jurisdictions that are considered low, you know, there's one rate. If you're in a higher jurisdictions that are considered higher rates, there's a different available per diem rate. But they actually do go list. They go through and they list which are each of the locations and whether they're higher low rates. But yes, you can, to the extent that you're not reimbursed for the full amount, you can deduct the difference.
SAG requires that the actors get more than the allowable per diem, so that additional money is reported on their W-2s as income. And some other people may give you more. If they give you more, then they should report it, the difference.
Is there a resource we could use that we'd look up by city or state that is?
I just Google per diem rates, and a bunch of things come up. I think it's under the GSA, and you can type in the city and the state, and it will give you, or just the state, and it gives you all the cities. You can look for foreign rates that way. It's very simple. I do it for my clients, but I have a couple of clients who do it for themselves, which is nice, but because you can, 5 days here times this, blah, blah, blah. You know, you can get endless, but.
We've got time for about three more questions. Anybody else? We questioned out? We scared? Don't panic.
Can you tell us what are the major differences between Schedule C and Schedule E? Because I know it was brought up.
Sure.
Like,
so the Schedule C is where you report. That's report of self-employment income, and that's income that you're receiving for your services or reimbursements generally for expenses that would be related to your services. The Schedule E is report of rental income or royalties. So if you are renting equipment and also billing for your services, then they would put the rents in box one of your 1099 miscellaneous, and they would put the payments for your services in box seven of the 1099, the non-employee comp. And you would report the box 7 on your Schedule C, and you would report the rents that you receive on Schedule E. And the main difference, so you can still take expenses against that. You know, for example, if you have expenses against the rental of your equipment, if you had to, you know, transport it there, or if you, you know, if you're depreciating the equipment associated with it, those would be expenses that you deduct on Schedule E. The main difference is that you're not subject to self-employment tax on the Schedule E, but you are subject to self-employment tax for your services.
One more over here. Oh, hold on.
Oh, and one other thing. If you get a 1099 and file a Schedule C, you are a sole proprietor. You have a business. Whether you think you do or not, you do.
Hello. So currently I have a 9-month out of 12 months of the year as a staff job, and then for the other 3 months and on the weekends, I have a doing business as, and I freelance time to time to make ends meet, et cetera, et cetera. Does that change my eligibility for deductions, like going to NAB in April or buying a camera or things like that, where I want to deduct them as a sole proprietor of a business, but I am an employee for 9 months out of the year, and so that changes things maybe?
A little bit. So when I have an employee, someone who has freelance income as well as W-2 income, I typically look at the expenses and I say, you know, wait, what are these expenses related to? If they're sort of directly related to your W-2 job, then you know, clearly I need to take them as an employee business expense. If they're only indirectly related, then I look at them and I say, wait a minute, can I make the case that you will be using it mostly for your self-employment? So, you know, for example, I buy a computer, and while you sometimes use it on your W-2 job, you mostly use it because you've got the self-employment gig. So I might deduct 100% of it on your Schedule C. For other expenses that are a little bit of both, I say make some reasonable allocation, and maybe I deduct half of them on employee business expenses and half of them on Schedule C. It's a little aggressive to deduct all of them on Schedule C.
Yeah.
The staff job and the freelance job are very much almost the exact same thing. I'm
right.
Like staff for a camera here, and then I freelance camera there. Does that change that, or is it still I should focus more on, okay, you bought a camera, that's clearly you're freelancing, you're not using it on your staff job.
Yes, and so, you know, I might allocate it in different ways. I might sort of allocated on the basis of revenue. So 2/3 of your money came from your W-2 job and 1/3 of your money came from your self-employment gig. So it might split your expenses 2/3, 1/3. Or I might look at it based on how much time do you spend. So 3/4 of your time is at your W-2 job and only 1/4 of your time is on your self-employment gig. So maybe I'd split it 75-25. But, you know, it's sort of like, is it directly related? If it's not directly related, then make some reasonable allocation.
But also if you're, like for going to NAB, you mentioned, if your salary job does not require you to do that, then it would be a Schedule C deduction. When you're salaried and you deduct, or you know, you get a W-2, and you deduct expenses, those expenses have to be ordinary and necessary. They have to be basically required by your employer, and they would not be reimbursed. So, you have to, but I do have to say that people who are, when you get to a certain level in a business, there are certain things you have to do to maintain and improve your skills, and you're expected to get to that job knowing these skills. So there are a lot of more things that might be deductible.
What do you do in the case where a company doesn't want to pay your equipment rental to your company, and they just want to give it to you in your regular pay?
Well, I just want to I want to just mention something about that. I have several clients who've called me up on the phone and say they won't pay my rental unless I form an LLC. So they went out and formed one, because everybody's cracking down on this kind of thing. If you're working on a movie and you get rental, you have to turn in a kit rental form every single week. It didn't used to be that way. But now you have to turn in every, and if you don't, it will be put on your wages and it will be taxed as wages.
All right, we've got time for one last question.
I have an LLC in a partnership with multiple people. So can I utilize that on a freelance job for myself And how does that, can I intertwine the two worlds?
It's possible. I mean, what I would say is make sure that you, LLCs, if you're a limited liability company, theoretically, you can make unequal allocations. You can make distributions in any way that you want to. So you could get a gig where you say, and I have some companies that do this, where they say, okay, there are some jobs we do together and we split this in this percentage. There are other jobs where you do it by yourself and you bring that in and then we're going to turn around and pay you out this fee. So you've just got to get an agreement going with your partners and say, hey, if each of us bring in our own gigs, then we're going to treat it this way and get paid out this way. And typically you do that in the form of a guaranteed payment, which is like a partner's salary. So, you know, you bring in this job, we make sure that you don't have any expenses or it's not costing me something, for example. So if, for example, you have this production insurance and you hire some people to work on your job, it's going to cost a little something extra, you know, because I'm going to have to pay out this insurance. So if I were doing this, I would want to make sure that we agree that, okay, so from this fee, we're going to deduct a certain amount of expenses to cover, you know, the partnership's extra costs, and then you then get paid out the net after deducting those allocable expenses. But there's nothing that precludes you from doing that. I would just make sure that you and your other partners agree on what the ratio and the formula is going to be for that kind of sharing.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, that wraps it up. Thank you, Nick, Nancy, Ann, and Tammy. Thank you guys so much. Again, we'll put this online in the coming days. Any questions? You've got Nancy's email, of course. Thank you guys for coming.
Thank you. Thank you.